Welcome to Desert Oracle Radio Replay once again. This weekend we say goodbye to November 2025 and hello December. There is no stopping it. So I hope you, Gallatin Valley, and online listeners are all good. You're listening to KGVM, Bozeman Community Radio, 95.9 FM, and streaming at kgvm.org. I'm your host, Roxana. Let's have the newest Desert Oracle Radio episode. From Ken Lane, November 24th, 2025, here is Thanksgiving in the High Desert.
Now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert. Maybe night has fallen where you are, too. Or maybe it's not dark yet. But it's getting there. The daylight savings business is just savage. One of those things the Devil's Own Committee came up with. Something that was a lie from the start. The campaign for daylight savings time, which occurred in the previous century, was all based on lies, on marketing department lies using fake farmers' lore. They claimed that farmers preferred picking crops with the dew still on them, which was just some slogan somebody made up. It's not true. Besides, as important as agriculture is to feeding the nation, only about 1% of us work in farming. And that includes fishing and forestry, I guess because they all start with F in the labor statistics, which we don't have anymore, I guess. We're going to have to go with our gut, what we know is happening already. So for you farmers and ranchers and forestry people and fishermen, just get up whenever you want, whenever you think it's the right time for your work. And then we won't have to have it getting dark at 3 p.m. for everybody else, you know? Anyway, someday soon the EMP war will begin and we can all go back to sundials. Or better yet, we can go back to ignoring hourly time altogether. It's morning, then it's daytime, then it's night. What else do you need to know? Days get longer from winter solstice coming right up on December 21. To summer solstice. Then they start getting shorter until it's winter solstice again. People had this all figured out at least 12,000 years ago when the first phase of the temple complex at Göbekli Tepe was constructed in prehistoric Anatolia on the eastern edge of the Mediterranean. Like all such places, it's a solar calendar, too. You see it in the V-shaped characters, 365 of them in all, representing 12 lunar months plus an extra 10 days, plus that summer solstice V for 365. That last V is on the vulture.
Desert Oracle Radio.
If you haven't heard about that before, it's because the findings are fairly recent. First published in August of 2024, worked out by Dr. Martin Sweatman of the University of Edinburgh. The calendar is on that famous Göbekli Tepe column with that famous vulture sculpted in relief, a perfect vulture. If you use the Starwalk astronomy app or one with similar constellation art, you'll recognize that vulture as the same one behind the Lyre of Orpheus and the constellation Lyra, with Vega shining brightly on top. There's a solstice-marking stone circle in Egypt, too, that goes back 7,000 years. And Stonehenge in southwest England dates from 5,000 years ago. Did the ceremonial chieftains of these prehistoric monuments make up a reason for everybody to leap forward or spring backward or whatever twice a year for no good reason? History is silent. Because it was the time of prehistory, as we mentioned. Although I've never quite bought the definition of prehistory, because writing is a development from pictographs, which are accepted as writing when it comes to Egyptian hieroglyphs. But not when we're looking at the lines of stylized animal carvings up and down the columns of Göbekli Tepe, which also seem to use something very similar to the modern letter V. Or more accurately, the triangular delta letter in Greek, to mean day. Snowy mountaintops across the west, we love to see it. In the western Mojave, all the transverse ranges have at least a dusting, with the big peaks all covered in white. San Gorgonio looks so pretty right now. You can almost forget it's a haunted mountain that eats people and is usually known by its local nickname, Old Grayback, because that's how it looks. The Sierra Nevada is already off to a great start for the year, especially if you're a skier or a water agency engineer. And it is predicted to have a solid midwinter snowfall-wise. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, acronym NOAA, get it? NOAA, predicts slightly above average temperatures in the border region of the southwest, the usual in the middle, but much colder in the Rockies and northward. Precipitation has already been way over average in California, with the Mojave already about five times the average October-November rainfall totals. So if it's a little lower through the winter, that's fine. We'll take it. Dear friends, lately I've been spread a little thin as I get our special Desert Oracle spinoff ready to launch for America's big 250th birthday, the U.S. Sester Centennial. You're already seeing these first couple of episodes if you're a regular Desert Oracle listener, and they're legally and officially Desert Oracle radio episodes. Don't believe the haters. They're just categorized in a certain way to show that they are specifically esoteric history episodes, each one a complete story about a particular time or place or persons, all of the above generally, plus ghosts, and the long, strange story of America. But every little change of any kind is a bureaucratic and technological nightmare of dull chores and pointless roadblocks. So these efforts are always staggered and wounded when are the sole responsibility of the host, writer, producer, designer, engineer, distributor, and janitor here at Desert Oracle headquarters. Screwed up my schedule 6 days to Sunday is what I mean. Oh, let me mention this while we change soundscape tracks. The soundscapes you listen to on this program are created by our own Red, Blue, Black, Silver. Check them out on Bandcamp. Sometimes I'll lose an entire week or three just trying to find out what happened to a pile of money I was supposed to get to finally pay the printer or other bills. I did all my parts, handed over property and proposals, whatever the scheme. Well, they just aren't going to pay the money, are they? What am I going to do? Outnumbered, outflanked, etc. War all the time, as Charles Bukowski said. Not the fun kind of war, either, which is the kind I long for, as many of us do these days. Everybody wants some kind of war. War on the streets, or war between the sheets, is that the saying? It's coming one way or another, whether you long for it or not. Now, I don't mind if I go down fighting, especially if it's in the woods, in the mountains, on the desert. Like my ancestors, like William Wagner Lane, sniping at the redcoats from the piney woods of Virginia. Although he survived, he headed off through the gap to eastern Kentucky with the old family friend Daniel Boone, who surely charged the Lane family his customary fee, which may or may not have been paid in buffalo hides or corn whiskey. I've considered it, and I prefer being battle slain to every other alternative beyond expiring at the end of the trail up my beloved mountain. In the wild grove on the bright autumn morning of my 90th birthday. Sit under an old pinyon, gaze out upon the glorious wilderness one last time, and get some rest, finally. A peaceful end, which is far more likely than some glorious scene out of For Whom the Bell Tolls. Guerrilla warfare in the Sierra de Guadarrama. Militias and such things are a young man's work, after all. Although, if you remember the book, if you're one of the few who remembers how to read books, there is old Anselmo, the mountain guide who leads Robert Jordan to the hidden camp of the rebels. Anyway, I'll officially launch the spinoff in a week or three, God willing, Woden willing. It's called The Eldritch Republic. And if you're wondering what Eldritch means, take a listen to the second episode, Thomas Jefferson's UFO. Speaking of giving thanks to the gods, to Wotan, or however you call his name, it's almost Thanksgiving, and we out here in the Mojave Desert are very thankful for the constant drenching rain for these past several weeks or months, however long it's been. Everybody wants rain in the desert until it arrives. And round after round of pounding Pacific storms that not even our sky-high wall of mountains can keep out. Once again, I've got stuff growing out of the ground that 100% does not belong in the desert, and stuff we'd hoped that we'd seen the last of back in August. Like the miserable ragweed that thinks it's springtime already. The poor old dog can't even step outside without those evil goat heads sticking in his paws. But more storms are coming. Although there's a good sunny stretch of days coming all this Thanksgiving week. It's already so pretty out, it almost hurts to be inside during these two short days. But lucky and blessed is the desert visitor arriving in time for a week of sunny days of 60 degrees plus and crisp autumn nights of 40 Fahrenheit or so. Hopefully all these muddy pools of rainwater will dry up, return to the heavens. But by next weekend, we're back to cloudy skies and probably more rain. I've lived in the desert for most of my adult life, and I just don't have enough rain gear. I don't even have, what do they call them? Those terrible blue plastic things that all the people wear up in Portland or Seattle as they're going to the drugstore to get their antidepressants. Raincoats? But they've got some awful new name now. Rain shells? I've got a winter coat that's made of oilskin. That's the skin of an oil field worker, and that works pretty good. Until day 4 or 5 of the rain. But then it never gets a chance to dry out all the way. Even when I hang it by the fireplace, and it smells like my dog, which is a good smell for a dog, but less so for a man. You know, it's getting rough out there when the bankers are proposing 50-year mortgages. This idea was coughed up by some real estate advisor to the current government, bizarrely marketed as an FDR-style achievement. As Franklin Roosevelt's Great Depression administration pushed the 30-year mortgage as a way for cashed-out people to stretch a home purchase payback to the end of their expected lives, which was about 60 or 65 years for working people of those times, and maybe of the future. The 30-year mortgage was a move of desperation during a global economic collapse. And regardless of your favorite team in retail politics, team bankers or team bankers, we are entering an economic collapse. A demographic collapse. A grim awakening to the uncontested fact that most economic activity of the past dozen years plus since the housing market collapse is a shuffling of balance sheets on the computers. And the coming troubles are worldwide, playing out in similar ways from China to Western Europe. It's comforting for a lot of people to believe conditions are caused by whoever's elected to deal with the conditions, but the recent election in New York City is also about the price of housing. The 50-year mortgage is the brainchild of Wall Street in New York, and the socialist answer in New York to the same problem is government-owned housing projects. For you, if you're lucky. If you're a fan of government-owned housing projects, I advise you to spend 8 or 9 minutes reading up on such places. Whether in the dreary Panelock towers of Soviet-controlled Eastern Europe, or the hellscapes of U.S. housing projects. Government contracts for government buildings to destroy the human soul, to crush opposition, to crush hope. Now, Instagram is full of accounts promoting $50,000 houses in various places that are generally safe to live in. Just make sure they're not in a collapsed Rust Belt or Midwestern city. But why not live in a farm town of 500 people in the middle of nowhere? Why not? Or up some lonesome road in the hills or off Highway 50 in the middle of the Great Basin Desert where they've still got truck stops. Western wear stores where the winters are cold and dry and the summers aren't much different, just hotter and drier. I talk with people about such things, especially city people toying with the idea. And the millennials always say something like, "Well, I don't want to be so far from government services. Honey, there aren't going to be any government services when you're old and you need them. Sorry." The best health plan for old age is living somewhere far away from the sirens and the night raiders where the air is clear and the water comes from a local spring, a well on your property, rainwater collection. But the way it goes, you'll probably have satellite internet to stream the slop. But you're unlikely to have Social Security or whatever sort of government payments that'll pay for you to just be alive. The local church, whether it's organized around the Bible or the Vatican or simple old ways of meeting in the high place now and then for festivals and worship, that's more likely to save you from starvation and the roving hordes than any political vision you're wasting precious emotional energy over today. The local hardware store will be a better source of survival than whatever billions the climate industry spends on propping up their global industry of lawyers and consultants and travel agents. Some people get the ick, as they say, on whatever it is, TikTok. They get the ick over the idea of small communities, and I understand. I live on the edge of a place with about 30, 35,000 people spread over 1,300 square miles of Mojave Desert. And I'd be just fine with the disappearance of about 29,000 of those people. Just whisk them off to wherever, the Rapture, or Florida, or work camps, or cruise ships, I don't care. Too many people and too few who even notice this earthly paradise where they live. Beyond the rundown strip malls and potholed asphalt. Life was different in the old American settlements, especially the old settlements of the Blue Ridge, the Big Sandy, the bluegrass, a lot of blue. Here's this from Mrs. Daniel Boone, one of the pioneer greats. Sunday, harvest moon, 1792. Dear diary. Well, Daniel Boone has been gone on his long hunt now for about 18 months now. Which I reckon is the longest time any woman of childbearing age should have to fight the old devil in the form of my husband's younger brother, who tempts me so with his charming demeanor, musical talent with the fiddle, plus how the children look so fondly on their uncle, who, after all, is blood relation to us all. If Daniel is not back in a fortnight, I fear I shall give over to such wild desire as Venus herself would faint to consider. Mrs. Daniel Boone. Well, that's something like that. I can't find the book. I had it out from where it was supposed to be, and then I thought it was in the studio, and here we are. That's basically what happened. Very family-oriented community. So Daniel Boone finally comes home. I believe he was imprisoned by the Indians for a year, and he took an Indian wife, so he could not really be holier than thou about it all. But when he got home, his wife was holding a baby. And Daniel Boone's own brother, whatever his name was the father. Let's say William or James is going to be something along those lines. I will find this book. Overall, that's a good way to look at how a small community in the wilderness might work. Everybody has to pitch in. Widows are often widowed young and with children who need a father. Widowers, too, are going to be common. Daniel Boone was all right about it. Had walked up to the clearing where the whole clan was out drinking and dancing around the fire one pleasant night. And his wife didn't even recognize him under the thick beard and sun-darkened face and all the filth. But he inquired about the baby, and his missus says, "It's your brother's. We'd all mourned your death for so long, etc." And Daniel Boone just smiled underneath all his filth and beard and hair, and he took the baby and he held it, and he raised that child as his own. And he never said another word about it. He did kill his brother. No, that's another story. His brother was fine. They had a real fine Thanksgiving that following Thursday. It all worked out. You can tell that story on Thursday. You can ask to say the blessing and then tell that story. Friends, if you listen till the end of the broadcast, then a friend you are indeed. And if you're looking for a stocking stuffer for the Desert Oracle appreciator in your life, including yourself, don't leave out yourself. Well, I'm opening up the vaults and I'm selling individual copies of Desert Oracle number 10 for the first time. DesertOracle.com. Number 10 only went out to subscribers back in too long ago, so what I'm saying next is to address the problem mentioned previous. With some more money, I could afford to pay the printers and the post office for the next couple of issues. I would like to get them out. It's been another frustrating year on the make enough to print the issues front of the war. So if only 15% of the listeners, I know how many listen, if only 15% of you order the Desert Oracle Christmas Stocking Stuffer Special, which is a print copy of our beautiful issue number 10, the one with the ominous coyote, plus a 4x4-inch Desert Oracle yellow vinyl bumper or laptop sticker, well, then I can pay Mr. Corporate Industrial Printer plus the United States Postal Service for the production and shipping of the next 3 issues, which would take us through to the last issue I've promised, lucky number 13. You get the issue and the sticker all in an official secret Desert Oracle mailing envelope to your mailbox, all for $15.99, postage paid, sent straight from Yucca Valley, like Santa Claus hiding in your junk mail. Go to DesertOracle.com right now. It'll be at the top of the page. Happy Thanksgiving. Thanks to all our patrons that support the show on Patreon. And good night from the voice of the desert.
It's the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay, broadcasting on KGBM 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio, and streaming at kgbm.org. Let's continue with the December 4th, 2020 episode titled "The Cold and the Dry." Sound familiar?
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert. It's getting cold out here. At night, anyway. the days are fair as long as that sun's on you. You hardly notice it's chilly out. But coming around the wash into the shady part behind the boulders, and good Lord, it's like a bucket of cold water dropped down your shirt. Well, here we are, a year later. And supposedly there's a light at the end of the tunnel. That's what I see in the newspapers. Which means, as far as I can tell, 4 or 5 or 6 months more of people yelling at each other on the TV and that endless game they play with the sanity of the entire human population. Remember when the pandemic began a year ago now, and in the first city it hit hard across the seas, they just built a 10,000 bed hospital overnight? That doesn't even come up in America. Of course it's bad if we're out of hospital beds over at the regional corporate medical center. This being America, that's pretty much the end of the story, though. At least we have lots of vacant commercial space to turn into field hospitals or whatever. I drive around Yucca Valley and 29 Palms, and I find myself playing a sad little game called Retail Bingo. You ever do that? Try to find a retail space that still has a business in it. A business that's still open. Corporate chains not included. Out here in the rural west, half the spaces were vacant before the pandemic. You remember that? And now it's worse, now that the pandemic has finished off the small businesses that had held on through years and decades of vulture capitalist retail bingo. The only new businesses you see, they get a new space and fresh plastic signs and all that, are the bottom feeder chains. The Family Dollar and the Dollar General and Dollar City and Dollar Town. The ones that turn up after all the local groceries have been shut down. The ones that turn up after Walmart has gotten rid of just about everything else. Home Depot. What does that even mean? Is it like a train depot? I see no homes arriving and no homes departing. Just a lot of alleged contractors walking around with their chin diapers pulled low, sucking on sports drinks. What sport is that anyway? What sport is that called? In America, a contractor is somebody who did so poorly in every aspect of life that there's nothing left but let them come into your house and break everything while you're not there. Contractors love to give you medical and science opinions too, which is kind of a lot coming from somebody who last looked at a science book the month before they turned 16 and could finally drop out. Not that I blame them. Another year watching inspirational videos from the PE teacher on your laptop, I'd rather eat fiberglass. And at least if you ask a contractor what they do, there's an answer that can be understood. Yes, these people who work at home on the Zoom and get full benefits, hey, what do you do? And they just kind of beat around the bush for 5 or 10 minutes and you realize that they don't know either. Anyway, as always, I recommend hiding out in a cozy little desert cabin with maybe a 3-quarter bathroom and a good dog or two. Just stay out of the way until this blows over in another couple of 100 years. We got some good news from our local land trust the other day. They are regularly a source of good news. And I mentioned it on the internet, and of course, somebody sent me a message saying, well, that's not very many acres at all, and everything's doomed, etc. And I just blocked that person. But first of all, it's a piece of the puzzle. Part of these wildlife corridors connecting bigger chunks of open wilderness. 200 acres there, 50 there, maybe a whole 640 acre section over here. Get this or that agency to turn over this or that piece. And before too long, you've got a lot of the map in good shape around where you live. Or where you like to spend your leisure time. Or where you just like to think about. It's nice to know it's out there. It's my favorite kind of progress because nothing happens to the land. Nobody builds another dumb suburban development named after the place it just destroyed. Nobody builds a new Home Depot to serve the suburban development that's going to empty out as soon as the next foreclosure wave begins. And other than some on-the-ground restoration of some native plants, maybe some monitoring of this or that, counting the birds, cleaning up all the old garbage from the other Home Depot that people dumped out there when the stuff broke the day the warranty ended. The land stays the way it's supposed to be, shared with us humans as a place to walk, to climb, to explore, to do your religious rituals. Clean up after yourself when you're doing your religious rituals. We do appreciate it. A place to gaze at and wonder. A place to get lost. Maybe they'll never find you. Wouldn't that be nice? They're never gonna collect on that student loan now, are they? So I was talking with this reporter way out in Brooklyn last week, and I'm doing this because we have a new book out. It's Desert Oracle Volume 1, Strange True Tales of the Desert Southwest. And he asked about the land conservation problems facing the California desert, and I said, you know what? Things are actually looking good in that department. Thanks to the work of a lot of people over many decades, much of the open desert in California and Nevada is going to stay mostly that way. Of course, you have to fight for every acre, every inch. But it's good work. It's satisfying work. It's morally sound. And when you look at the public lands map of America, as Brendan Cummings from the Center for Biological Diversity showed us last week during this program we did with the Mojave Desert Land Trust, we are blessed with a whole lot of open country. The Mojave and Great Basin, mostly home sweet home for me, those two deserts. There's national forests, national monuments, national parks, federally protected wilderness, state parks, wild and scenic rivers. California and Nevada have a lot more people than they did 40 years ago when I first started rambling around this landscape. And a really surprising amount of it is still there. We need it. It's a carbon sink, as I probably say too often here, but it's true and it matters. Like the Amazon or the piney forest in the mountains. It's the last great refuge of the continental United States. It's the last place where you can easily get lost and die and never be found. Or make people think that. God bless it. Whatever God you like. Personally, I'm fond of Saint Minerva, our ancient goddess of the Mojave and deserts everywhere. Like all the old ones, the spirits of place, you want to stay on her good side. These sounds you're hearing, along with your host, the sounds are by Red, Blue, Black, Silver. You know, if I don't get through some of this mailbag by the end of the year, they're going to make me get a smaller mailbox, so let's give it a try here. Let's see, this is from D, I believe. And it's a postcard that says Secret Societies. There's a couple of Jawas, and there's the All-Seeing Eye, and there's a skull on a secret book. Sent on 13 October 2020. It's a lucky day for all of us. Hey, Ken Lane, we were wondering if you knew anything about the St. Thomas ghost town that has reappeared recently after being destroyed in the Hoover Dam flood in the 1930s or 40s. Hope you're in good spirits. That's from Christine. No, I don't know anything about this. I'm going to put out the word. I know we have some listeners in Boulder City and that general area. let me know what's going on. If a ghost town named St. Thomas has reappeared mysteriously, I'm going to have to get right out there. I'm going to have to skip the dental hygienist or something. This postcard has a picture of a Joshua tree and some boulders and the Milky Way at night, which is something you can really see out here on a moonless night, which isn't this week. Hail, fellow traveler, my good friend Ross L. introduced me to your podcast, zines, and monumental book, Dignity. We were among the unfortunate masses who traveled to California for the live taping of the radio show last July. Unfortunate because, of course, it was canceled. Unfortunate because it still gave us the opportunity to camp under the vast blanket of celestial bodies in Death Valley, Mojave, and Joshua Tree. My favorite night was the one we spent out at the foot of the Kelso Dunes, admiring the very visible Jupiter and Saturn. It got me thinking about what else might be up there. In your expertise, what do you make of the Nibiru? I don't know how to say this, I'm sorry. Conspiracy. The idea that there might be other planets hidden in our own solar system. Regardless, I really dug the Halloween shows. Keep doing what you're doing. Your Texas comrade, Ethan. You know, I remember seeing that stuff show up on UFO message boards in the early 2000s. You gotta go look through those things sometimes, otherwise you won't know what's going on in the sky. It's not like there's an official place to report a mysterious, glowing, hovering, silent, triangular thing with a big eye in the middle of it. But I don't think there's much to that. I mean, you got astronomers and astrophysicists basically climbing over each other with knives in their teeth for the chance to discover and name any new astronomical body. You think they're gonna hide a planet? That's probably the only way you get tenure in that field. I'm not going fast enough, am I? This is the old Citizen Times newspaper building in Asheville, North Carolina. Dearest Mr. Oracle, I have been enjoying your show for many years from out here in Asheville. Just wanted to say that I am deeply in love with both you and Red, Blue, Black, Silver. Your show is one of the highlights of my week. Cheers, fellas. Chelsea. Thank you. Thank you, Chelsea. I always got to share everything with a Red, Blue, Black, Silver. Dear Desert Oracle, thank you for what you do on the radio and podcast. I grew up in L.A. hiking in the Mojave often. I am now a park ranger based out of Moab. I've also worked in the Sonoran Desert, on the Great Plains, in the mountains, and elsewhere. And was trying to explain to a room full of other Colorado Plateau Rangers how the Mojave just feels different. I struggled for the words, but a former Death Valley Ranger got it and recommended I listen to your show. You capture the spirit of that desert better than anything or anyone else I know. It brings me right back to the feeling of being out there. Thank you. Oh, thank you. I love hearing from rangers. That's morally sound work. no matter how bureaucratically annoying it can be. Especially these past years, I know. Our good friend C. Del Desierto sent just an atrocious picture of a Joshua tree surrounded by household trash. Some mattresses, like a Costco lounger that it looks like somebody died in because there's all this fluid kind of from the seat and then leaking out on the ground below. I guess that's blood. Looks sort of like where I used to live, by feeling. It says, photo from an odd job, Hesperia, California, 2020. Yeah, that's close enough. There's a grizzly bear on this one. It says, dangerous. Dear Ken, greetings from Victoria, BC, Canada. Oh, I love Victoria. British Columbia. I haven't been there in a couple of years. I went to Joshua Tree for the first time last summer, but I did not hear about Desert Oracle until I got back home from my trip. I love the desert so much and had a wonderful stay there. I was hoping to come back this summer, but travel may not be possible, unfortunately. I listen to the podcast as soon as a new one comes out, and I dream of my time in Joshua Tree. I can't wait to read the new book. I wish I was there. Sincerely, Jessica. Jessica, it's funny because often in the summertime here, I wish I was in Victoria. Especially up in the woods, a little north up the island from town, but oh, I love that town too. So maybe we can trade. I'll go there and you can come here. You gotta feed my Roadrunner. You feed it by just staying inside and watching it kill things. This has been Desert Oracle, and I'm your host, Ken Lane. We broadcast from Joshua Tree in the Great Mojave Wilderness on Friday nights in the high desert. You can listen to us on the good old FM radio. That's the best way. 10 p.m. to 11 p.m. in Joshua Tree. Other times in other markets. Especially if you're in the podcast market, we have a podcast available wherever you get them. I apologize in advance for the upcoming week of book publicity. It's how it goes. So if you follow us on social media, please be patient. It only lasts a week. You don't have to unfollow us or cancel your subscription or report us to the sheriff. We're just trying to sell a book for the holidays. Remember the holidays? Remember giving? It seems like Giving Tuesday was only this week. We have a website, DesertOracle.com, where you can subscribe to our magazines, of course. But there's also a blog for this radio show with details about each show, strange pictures, photographs, links to all kinds of absurdities you may want to investigate during your late night rabbit hole dives on the internet. Speaking of rabbits, I was sad to find one of the rabbits that lives on this property where I live dead. I think it got hit by something. I was feeling bad for it, but in the morning, it was all gone, and the ravens were finishing up the scraps. I found just a little tuft of a cottontail. Good night from the voice of the desert.
Our background audio today has been Old Grayback by Red, Blue, Black, Silver. So my thanks goes out to him and to Ken Lane for sharing their work on Desert Oracle Radio. I am grateful for my fellow volunteers and for the supporters and underwriters of KGVM. This program broadcasts on the air at 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgvm.org at 7 Sunday nights and 9 Monday mornings. Enjoy that full moon on December 4th. That's Thursday this week. For some reason, some call it the cold moon. Well, it's the third and last of the 2025 supermoons, so it will really light things up if we have a clear sky. I'll be back next week with more desert and mountain lore for you. Till then, watch the skies. Keep doing good things. Stay well and sweet dreams. See you next week.